development oriented towards very low impact type development, but there would be development, there would be a high emphasis on access. I've heard the governor say more than once that one of the things that bothers him about more wildernessy type parks is that you almost have to break the law to get there. And clearly what he visualizes is an area that could be enjoyed on the water by a large number of people in a large number of ways. And there would be a great variety of attraction to it.
Okay, Mr. Chairman, I think just following up just a little bit there with, if I can remember what the news item was in bits and pieces, but representing an island, Kodiak Island, that was heavily impacted by the oil, and also the Kenai Peninsula that was impacted, that there were a number of other suits or litigations out there, whether they came from a private individual or whether business was affected or the communities that were affected. And I thought I understood there that this type of a settlement was looking to be something that would be a final type, all-inclusive type of an arrangement. And I know that although many of the people may not disagree with the concept of having a marine or a water park area in the Prince William Sound, that the other areas that were impacted as well probably would have some reservations about being thrown in as this is being the final settlement here and everything and everybody else is happening.
Sure. And again, it may be that the terminology of the Prince William Sound area as applied to the park is also too narrow. It may be that there is a broader area that could benefit from the settlement and this type of approach. Clearly, as you come out of Prince William Sound, geographically, you're going to Kenai Fjords. Should that be part or not? And how much further do you go and where do you go and all those kind of things, I think, are questions that are very open. As far as, again, the settlement, I think people need to be a little careful in that the settlement involved here is not for everybody. I mean, this is not for all claims against the parties. It is for the public claims.
Mr. Chairman, I guess I just wanted to hear that.
Sure.
Because I was a little bit nervous there when I heard what I thought to be that this would be a final settlement.
No. Right now, the two public claims against Exxon, as I would, again, I don't want to practice law, get the Attorney General down here, but as I would understand, the state and the federal government have both now filed civil claims against Exxon, and those are basically the claims for the public damage. Not as affected fishermen, not as impacted governments, other things. This is for the public damage.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. Anything else? Senator Frank.
Thank you. You mentioned sale of North Slope Gas, and of course the projects that come to mind are the two proposed gas lines. Are there other projects that may be feasible up there, or what are the other potentials for selling North Slope Gas?
Those are the only two I am aware of at this time. Let me put it that way. But the reason I tried to say it very carefully is that I would just observe to you, I think it's in the state's benefit if there were four projects and the market could support them. That's what I would like to see. And that's where I'm trying to come from on it is to simply say, right now there's, quote, two competing projects is the way people put it. They may be competing, but they're not competing with me. They're competing in the marketplace. My job is to help move forward both of them. If the market can stand and accept both of them, Alaska wins. If there were two more that could work, Alaska wins.
Could I follow up on that?
Mm-hmm.
That kind of reminds me of the whole notion of what the state's policy is with regard to making its assets available for development. It seems like in the oil and gas leasing, we usually have taken the approach of, well, they're there, left to the private sector to develop the resource with some constraints by theoretically the Oil and Gas Commission in the case of oil and gas, I guess, so that they don't, you know, do it too fast or something like that. But Conversely, what's your view of a proactive approach to the development of oil and gas resources and to encourage the development of these resources so that we don't necessarily just have to wait around until the industry thinks it's you know, the right time based upon their worldwide developments and worldwide, you know, asset base?
Well, what I've seen, I think, in Alaska is over the years, and again, my history sort of goes back to 69, is where I'm speaking from, is that as the state has presented itself as wanting people to do that kind of business here, as land has been offered, again, whether it was federal land or state land, as land has been offered for exploration, people have come forward. From my point of view, the way for the state to win is to encourage more people to want to do it. The more competitive that is, the better job we're going to get done, the more money we're going to get paid, and everything else. We need to keep encouraging people to keep doing business here. We need to encourage additional people, if we can, to come in and do business. That maximizes the effort in terms of dollars we receive in lease sales. It maximizes the generation of ideas. Our role in leasing these things is to give people a chance to explore. And if you look at how the exploration process really works, what's very interesting is you can give a whole bunch of different groups of geologists the same basic information, and they all see different things. And I think it's great when we end up with a situation where four or five different ideas are all out there, and they're all being pursued with fairly large investments. Now, I don't know which one of them's right. I don't need to decide which one's right. Again, as long as the money's there to continue that process, we're going to get it explored. And that's what I care about. The pace of activity in Alaska, I think, historically has been driven by what kind of lands were made available and under what circumstances people were allowed to drill. At this point, I think we're probably doing reasonably well in that regard. And as I've said before, one of my priorities is to keep the revenues up. I think we'll continue to do that. One of the roles I intend to play with our oil and gas division, and we've already started to do it, is to provide some challenging interaction as to some of our basic leasing terms, those kind of things, to try and strengthen our position as much as we can.
Thank you. Thank you. Okay. Any further? Senator
Cutt. I'm just reading the paper here.
What did I say in the paper?
No, it was about the lease sale, and I was just catching up on it.
We have a lease sale expert in the back. Would you like to ask?
Sure. I'd like to find out what you're willing to tell us anyway. It was $33 million. Did most of that come from the North Slope leases or was it evenly divided? I'm just catching up on some of the documentary here.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Cotton, members of the committee, the majority of the revenue yesterday.
You did right yourself, please.
I'm sorry, Mr. Chairman. My name is Jim Eason from the Division of Oil and Gas. About $5.5 million were from Cook Inlet, Cell 67A, and the remainder of about almost $34 million in total came from the Kaparka sale in North Slope.
So, what are you willing to tell us about the leases and what you know about them? What's public as far as likely prospects, likely to see oil rigs in downtown Anchorage? What can you tell us?
I spent 45 minutes talking about oil rigs in downtown Anchorage last night. I'll tell the committee the same thing I told that reporter. I think that's highly unlikely, but at the same time, we had, when we were preparing for that sale, we looked at a number of areas, including some acreage where the state still owned the subsurface rights, but not the surface in Anchorage, as well as in the Nancy Lake area and Big Lake area and elsewhere. And of course, we've always taken the position that we have an obligation to try to maximize the value of the subsurface resources for all the state's citizens, while walking that balance line of making sure that those areas that are particularly vulnerable, parklands and other areas, receive the protection they should. And in that case, of course, the areas around Point Warrensoff and in that vicinity of Nancy Lake and others, that acreage is provided or is protected with an absolute barrier to any surface occupancy. So those leases were offered in those areas with the prohibition that, or with the understanding and stipulation that, that they had to be developed from off-site. So that was one of the things that we spent a lot of time trying to reassure people about. There were a number of things that, that came out of the sale yesterday, and one of them confirms what Commissioner Hines just said a moment ago. From his background as an engineer, I think it's normal for him to think that all geologists have different opinions. But it turns out that, that there were some strong signals that there were a number of diverse opinions about the prospectivity, particularly of the North Slope acreage that we offered yesterday. And there were some very interesting things, I think, interesting conclusions to draw from the patterns that showed up in that sale. One of the things that appeared and was, from my point of view, very reassuring and encouraging is that we had some participation yesterday from companies that we traditionally have not seen in the leasing program in the state. We had participation for the first time by one of the Japanese companies, Nippon Oil, which is worldwide, is very experienced, very heavily capitalized, and capable of exploration, refining, and development of oil, and spends a lot of its resources in the Middle East. Nippon Oil showed up for the first time as a bidder and won leases along with a partner in our lease sale. And of course, that was the first time. They have been over, I think it was about 3 years ago, on the North Slope working with Texaco in a joint exploration agreement. But it was an arrangement that they had made subsequent to Texaco having obtained those leases years ago. There were other companies that showed up, Petrofina, that hasn't been seen for a long, long time. And I'm encouraged by that because
Is that a U.S. company?
The company that actually bid was the U.S. subsidiary. That's correct. It's a domestic corporation. And we were encouraged by that because we have made a special effort beginning last fall to try to encourage diversity, to encourage and solicit, if you will, additional companies into the leasing of our resources that haven't been here, and we're going to continue doing that. We've got some displays that we put together that provide information on the state's leasing program and on the available resources and locations of development, and we've spent some time trying to make that more broadly known among geophysical companies and, as well as geologists and exploration companies around the country. The other thing major thing that struck me yesterday was how much difference a few days or a few years can make in the way people view different areas on the North Slope. And it's very difficult to find out what were the underlying reasons, but one of the things that jumped out was that much of this acreage we offered yesterday in the eastern part of the sale area was acreage that was offered about 4 years ago in lease sale 51, in which less than, as I recall, about 20% of the acreage that was offered was leased. And the total bonus was relatively insignificant. And yesterday, many of those same tracks were offered again, and one of those tracks drew more than the total revenue from the past sale. And there was an obvious area of interest where one of the companies picked up several leases adjacent to one another that they had the opportunity to pick up at much better terms 4 years ago and just disregarded it totally. We also saw a pattern where people were picking up some acreage near the Kaparik unit and southwest of the Kaparik unit in Kobo Delta area, which were, I think, are obvious indications of continuing interest there and some discoveries that have been made in recent years, and interest in people in following up on those discoveries. And of course, we had one lease that was adjacent to the recent discovery of Point McIntyre, and we saw a very spirited competition for that lease, and the folks that were competing for it were the ones we expected, and we, in total, had a very good lease sale, and very few surprises, really. But perhaps on the total volume of money exposed and paid some surprises there. There was a lot of renewed interest.
The sale did cross a milestone, as I recollect. It did push the total lease sales revenues for the state in excess of $1.8 billion. And if you remember, we started early 1969, we had a $900 million one. Now all the other sales have basically equaled that one. There are a lot of healthy competitive things going on. I guess the only other observation, just to sort of close that subject out with you, is that it's very important we recognize any additional barrels that are found and produced on the North Slope tend to extend the life of the existing reserves. And of course, because of the state's beneficial ownership in Prudhoe Bay, any other barrels pay off in a benefit that's even larger than those barrels and our ownership in those barrels, because it extends the life of all those other reserves. And that is going to, in the longer term, be very crucial to us. And we need to keep that in mind as a very direct benefit.
Senator Frank?
Question back on some of this land stuff. The decision, I guess it was, I'm not even sure who made it, whether it was BLM or whatever, made on the pipeline corridor that apparently resulted in some 600 and some thousand acres instead of 6 million acres being put in certain status. I'm kind of hazy on that. Maybe you could review that with us and the significance of that.
Well, let me try the significance in a short form with you. And probably the best illustration is right up there at Coalfoot. Senator, could you just, right there is Coalfoot. And you can see the corridors in green. And just to the east of it, it is a large block of state of blue acreage there, of the state acreage. And one of the things that I think the state reasonably expects in the whole corridor process is that portion of the corridor that really provides routes and linkages to the state land will be conveyed to us. And we understand why the corridor was withdrawn in the sense of a withdrawal to keep it for the purpose of the pipeline. But we're at a point now, it would seem, in the process where the federal government ought to start to recognize our right to utilize that one crossing of the Yukon River, that one road north, to at least have a basis through land ownership patterns to link up with other large blocks of state land, a la that one to the east of Coalfoot. Now, I don't want to build, don't get me wrong, I don't want to build a road there right now. I don't want to do anything. I just wish we had a pattern of ownership that connected it. The government in that, the BLM in that decision, came within one section of linking us. And by leaving out two sections, they gave us a gap of 1 mile, where to cross that 1 mile, we have to go through basically a federal hearing process. And that upset us greatly. I mean, what we're interested in is clearly having a pattern of ownership where there is state land, so that, again, the state can make a choice as to what it wants to do. That's probably one of the most primary frustrating examples there. Now, that doesn't mean we can't go back and fill that gap in and get that 1 mile. But what we've not understood at this point is why they didn't give it to us.
Well, what did they do with it? I mean, they said it. They kept it in the corridor designation. Is that what they did? Mr. Heason, you want to try it?
I mean, I'm sorry, Gus. I'm sorry.
You might have a better answer.
Well, I don't know. He'd sell it, probably.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Gary Gustafson, Director of Land and Water Management. The withdrawal that Commissioner has spoken of, the green up there, is known as PLO 5150, first set aside in 1971 by the federal government for transportation utility corridor purposes. Interesting note is that in early 80s, the federal government revoked that withdrawal south of the Yukon River and gave the land to the state. We've been after them now for a number of years to do the same thing north of the Yukon River. We figured there's no reason for them to preserve that utility corridor, in as much as we already own half the land that the utility corridor now traverses from Prudhoe Bay down to Valdez. And we would certainly recognize and accept title subject to the Alyeska right-of-way, the TAPS or tags right-of-way, and whatever else were appropriate, valid existing rights. So that's a matter of state position for quite some time. We've articulated those views to the federal government. We've participated the last several years in a give and take with them. We thought that we had agreement with the federal government. We found out recently that perhaps that agreement wasn't what we thought it was, and we're now reviewing the situation, and hopefully this is one story that is yet to come to conclusion. It's not over yet.
So you expected them to turn it into yellow and they left it green? Is that what you're saying, mm-hmm. Kind
of? We expected it to turn to blue.
Oh, you we had asked
for it.
All right, and they denied it.
And maybe to more fully answer your question, our recourse in this case is we do have a right of an appeal on that decision by the BLM. I'm not sure I want to hold my breath on that right now. But we do have a right of appeal, at least.
And if we did, that would have reduced our
$20 million down to 14 or something then, or what?
Really, $6 million, isn't it, or something like that? Am I right on that?
I think $6 million is on the high side, but it would have been several million acres that, if we got the entire corridor, would have come to the state. Yeah. The areas that we had agreement from the federal government about a year ago to receive were this area north of Two Lick Lake in the green, which would have then been available for oil and gas leasing, other purposes contiguous to the block here, and then the development nodes at Coldfoot and Prospect Camp, which is about in this area. Prospect, by the way, would have also included a corridor over to this other blue tract of state land, which would have achieved the same purpose that the commissioner spoke to about this one, to the east.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
We will continue to pursue it.
On, Gary, you might stay at the table a little bit. I want to ask about the mental health trust land situation. I understood the governor say that he was going to take it into the governor's office, the problem, and look at every transaction that's been made over the last 30 years and figure out what those would be worth today. And I think that's probably around 6,000 transactions. I'm not sure, somewhere in that. Is your department, are you still active in this process, or is it strictly in the governor's office?
No, we're still active in it. I would describe it differently, Senator, than what I think the governor has given us as instructions.
All right.
In terms of the administration, I think we've considered a lot of alternatives, but I think the governor has accepted basically the recommendation we put in front of him, which is that the governor act as the convener of the interested parties, that they go ahead and try to negotiate a resolution. And again, without getting into the long form of the discussion, there's a lot of reasons to believe a unilateral solution just isn't going to work, that you really need to get the parties together. Secondly, the governor is the person who can represent all the interests of all Alaskans and say, wait a minute, for the good of us all, we need to get this resolved. We've tried as a part of that to get the governor to purposely not take a strong position. But as you heard in his speech, he does have thoughts, and by God, they do come out every now and then. And what he was basically, I think, observing was that parts of these transactions clearly involve sales to third parties. And to the extent that we made those sales, if you just took the value that the transaction occurred at, when it occurred, bring it forward with interest, that ought to be a fairly fair measure of what the value was. And I think that's the end of his illustration. He was trying to illustrate that at least one portion of the deal, it would seem, you shouldn't have to debate. Unfortunately, there's a lot of other parts to the transactions, as you know, and non-transactions. And I think we end up in a situation where we've got a much more complex situation than just valuation. Clearly, there are legislative prerogative issues that you need to deal with as a legislature. There are issues of service to the recipients, mental health recipients, and so on, that have to be dealt with. And those are not in our area of expertise, and I'm not going to muck around in those. But on the other hand, I think we will play a role in whatever negotiation process takes place. We have continued and will continue to try to work with the parties on the valuation side, to whatever can be done in terms of reconstituting some of this land. Because again, I guess as I've come to understand the issue, I think it's going to take both land and dollars to solve the issue. We will continue to play a positive force in that. And we've been working on it, and we're going to continue to work on it.
Okay.
Is there anything you want to add to that?
Yes, sir. That's fine.
Well, I just hope it's one of your top priorities, because
it is.
I'd certainly like to see it taken care of.
Okay, anything further?
All right. Thank you, Commissioner.
Thank you. Thank you very much.